Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I'm your host for the show. And sitting in the studio with me is my charming, talented, lovely, vivacious co-host, Bobby Jean Bell. And, of course, her husband, who is ever present, sitting in the other chair across the desk from us. Morning. Evening, Jim.
Hello.
And there you've heard it first.
Is his mic on?
No, I didn't turn him on yet. Well, you know, you know how to turn Jim on. Just rub him three times and say, I love you.
Now, don't be telling stories out of school.
Hey, tonight, we have a really, really, really fun lady going to be on the show with us. I'm going to go ahead and introduce her a little bit first because she is quite the lady. Her name is Jackie Boer. She's written a series of articles and books about her great-grandfather. His name is Tom Logan. He was the sheriff of Nye County in Nevada from the latter part of the 1800s to the early part of the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Mr. Logan met his demise in his underwear outside of a cat house in Nevada. And so that was primarily the premise of Jackie writing this story about her great-grandfather. And she's also written an article about Tom Logan. And she wrote a book about the president's pilot on Marine One, a helicopter pilot, who was the pilot for, I think, didn't she say Nixon and
Johnson, Nixon, and Ford.
Right, Johnson, Nixon, and Ford, and all the stuff that went on in that helicopter, which really I would love to read because that's got to be interesting as hell. We'll get to Jackie's bio here in just a moment. First of all, I want to let you know that The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, the nice folks at Black Dog, the great folks at
Out West
Boutique and Cultural Center in New Hall. You know, every time I look at Bobby Jean, I cannot remember Out West. I don't know what it is, but they're great folks. And just give them a call, and they've got pretty much everything you want for Western wear, accoutrement,
and stuff.
They even have saddles and saddle blankets. So that's how pretty much stocked up they are.
And hats and you name it, we got it.
They have it. And of course, Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, one of our good friends. And they, of course, have been sponsoring us for a number of months now. And take it away, Bobby.
We mention Target Freight Management every show. And we mention that they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload gets your freight there every time on time, no muss, no fuss, at the rates you need for your transportation bottom line? Call today at 1-844-653-7789 and tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates at the lowest hassle possible. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry you did.
Yep. And the owner of Target Freight actually has promised me that he will be in studio with us one of these days. Don't know when. Don't know when. If you want to call in and talk to tonight's guest, Jackie Boer, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And Jackie Boer is just quite the interesting lady. She began her writing career in 1968 as a teen correspondent for two Northern California newspapers. She's a longtime Sacramento resident, community activist, and dispute resolution specialist. Jackie's path to becoming an award-winning author crossed a rich landscape. I'm seeing, Jackie, this is why we ask you to write your own bio, because this is what we read on the air. A rich landscape of amazing true stories. Her first major work, Inside the President's Helicopter, is the award-winning memoir of White House Army One pilot. What's his name?
Gene Boyer.
There you go. Gene Boyer. And
he flew for Presidents Johnson, Nixon, and Ford.
There you go. He flew for Johnson, Nixon, and Ford. And her full book that came out fairly recently is called Logan, which is just a tremendous, tremendous story. I couldn't put it down when I started writing it. And it's about her great-great-grandfather, Sheriff Tom Logan. Would you please welcome to the writer's block, Jackie Boer. Jackie, with us.
I am here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. We're thrilled to have you. Truth.
Looking forward to sharing whatever I know.
Well, good, because we're going to pick your brains.
I'm ready.
Okay. You know, Nye County, where your great-grandfather was the sheriff, is a huge county.
18,000 square miles.
Right. And it stretches from, golly, northern Nevada all the way down to Pahrump, right?
Well, it's pretty much central Nevada. The county seat, the current county seat, is Tonopah, mm-hmm. and that's halfway between Reno and Las Vegas.
Right, right. Because my folks lived in Pahrump for a number of years, and we always made fun of, was it Nye County, because it was Denye County, because of the guest houses that were out in the desert there outside of Pahrump, the chicken ranch and et cetera, Sherry's.
There's a lot of stories out there, I'm sure. Dig them and you can find them.
Actually, you know, the truth is you can go there and they'll give you a menu, which is really kind of cool.
Something for your book.
There you go. Actually, I put all kinds of stuff in my books. Can you tell us a little bit about your great-grandfather and what kind of a man that you had heard stories about him being?
My great-grandfather was born in 1861 in Washoe County near Reno. Mm-hmm. He was the first of seven children. His father was from New York. His mother from Iowa. They had come to California with the Gold Rush movement and then decided to go into Nevada and follow the boom camps of Nevada in 1860. His father built one of the first hotels on Lake Tahoe. And don't we wish that property was still in the family?
Yes, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
However, it failed to prosper, even though Mark Twain was a frequent visitor. And the family then followed the boom camps from Austin to Pioche on down to the town that is now known as Logandale, east of Las Vegas. And during that time period, there were opportunities for them to farm and basically make their living through hauling materials, hauling ore, hauling produce, butcher shops, and so forth. So they were true pioneers, very much in tune with what was the demand at the time. Tom Logan was his father's oldest son, and when his mother died, he certainly became almost parental in the family. His father was a justice of the peace, and he was also a very staunch community advocate. I discovered it kind of runs in the family. Mm-hmm. But after he married, he moved to central Nevada with his wife, Hannah Hamblum, who is a prominent Mormon woman, and they began their family in the Nye County area. In the late 1800s, he was known as a successful cattleman. He had become a justice of the peace and ran for sheriff in 1898. He was reelected. He lost the next election because there were so many new people in the area. You know, the outsiders were coming in because of the big silver strike in Tonopah. He kind of went from being Andy of Mayberry to the sheriff of this very thriving metropolis area. If you can think of central Nevada as metropolitan, it certainly was a very busy, vibrant town. Lots of new things happening with the dynamics of a boom camp, which is anything from licensing dogs to where do you bury dead horses to prevent health hazards to how buildings are constructed, code enforcement, getting the jail set up. So these boom camps, I was really fascinated with how quickly they sprang up and how demanding they became as far as regulations and infrastructure and governance. Mm-hmm. So his third time he ran for office, he lost to a fellow from Michigan, and that fellow didn't do too well, and so they reelected him again. So he was in his third term when he was doing some work in the new mining camp of Manhattan, which is northeast of Tonopah. He was working on getting a new jail built there. They were running out of trees to tie the bad guys to, and the bad guys would cut the trees down because they didn't know how to contain them any other way. And he was also an investor in an establishment called the Jewel House. Tom Logan owned a saloon in Tonopah, and the Jewel House was what we call a house of ill fame. And by all accounts, it looks as though he was involved loosely with the proprietress of the Jewel House, Mae Biggs. She was a divorcee from Tombstone, who'd gotten run out of Tombstone. And one night, he was staying there, and there was a gambler who didn't want to leave, got in an altercation with Miss Biggs. She screamed. The sheriff came running from his room where he was in his nightshirt and ejected the gambler. The gambler turned around and shot him 5 times. And so my big question as this story passed down through the family was, how does a lowlife gambler shoot a sheriff 5 times who's unarmed and get away with murder? That's what drove me to begin researching this story.
Which is a very interesting question, because nowadays he wouldn't.
No, he would not. But it's funny how some things in history really haven't changed too much.
Right.
The advantage that the gambler had was that he was represented by 2 very ambitious attorneys, one of whom was a future U.S. Senator, Pat McCarran. Mm-hmm. And for folks who've gone to Reno, there's McCarran Boulevard, and Vegas, there's McCarran Airport. And prior to Pat McCarran becoming famous, he was a young attorney in Tonopah and looked at this case as an opportunity to advance his career, kind of finagled his way onto the case, and created a defense that the prosecutors could not dispute. They were pretty overwhelmed by his eloquence and his license for creative thinking.
There you go. I need to interrupt you for a moment, Jackie. I've got a caller on the line. Can you hang on?
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, welcome to the Writer's Block. This is Jim. Who's this?
Hi, it's Carolyn Howard Johnson.
Oh, my goodness.
Hi.
Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
Well, I intended to come by last week and actually, you know, congratulate you in a timely manner on your new time and place.
Oh, but, thank you so much. Would you like to talk to, what's your name?
No. Jackie Bohr. Oh,
God. What, Jackie Bohr?
Her name's Bobby Bill. You mean that one?
No, the other one, Jackie Bohr, the one we have on the line. Hang on just a second. Let me connect him. Jackie, you with us?
No, I don't like to intrude. I just
you're not intruding.
Hi.
Hi.
Jackie, say hi to Carolyn. Yeah. Carolyn, say hi to Jackie.
Yeah, pleased to meet you, Jackie.
Hello, Carolyn.
How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
Carolyn was a guest on our show about 3 weeks ago.
Or 3 or 4 weeks ago now.
Well, Jackie, after you have made your hit appearance on Writer's Block, you'll have to get in touch with me by email, and we'll chat.
I'll be happy to do that. This is one of the real advantages of working on this story. I consider my great grandfather somewhat of an ambassador because he has been responsible for me meeting an incredible new circle of people and friends.
Well, isn't it amazing?
There you go.
The funnest part of the whole procedure is the people.
Yes.
And we would agree that this has opened up lots of new friendships and relationships for
us
as well. Oh my goodness.
It's been actually a great journey for us.
Well, I can see that. And well deserved so
Well, thank you.
So, because there's so much energy going around this show.
Oh, well, thank you. Wow.
Well, it's true.
Well,
it's true.
We certainly appreciate your comments. I'll tell you. You know, just keep them coming.
Jackie, Carolyn.
Yeah, more.
As Jim said, Carolyn was on the show a few weeks ago, and she has written a number of books, a series of wonderful books on writing books, marketing books. She's also a poet. And Jackie, I thought it was very interesting that in your book on your granddad, on Logan, great-granddad, that you used poetry.
Right, right.
Throughout the book.
I did. Thank you so much for noticing that, because as I was doing the research, I would run across, as you can imagine, poems in the newspapers. I read approximately 20 years worth of newspapers that all covered this region, and thousands of hours into newspaper reading. And throughout the newspapers of that period were these wonderful, whimsical, sad, tragic, crazy poetry that, you know, anything from, you know, Longfellow to silly limericks. And I thought, who is gathering these? Who's reminding us of this viewpoint? And I thought they would be a wonderful way of setting the context of the time. So in between each chapter, I selected one of my favorite poems from the research that I did during that time period.
I thought that was really wonderful, and it did put us in sort of the cultural time, you know, put the cultural piece in the time period. And how interesting that you found all of them in newspapers. Like, is poetry in our newspapers today? I don't think so.
I'm a firm believer that the world needs more poetry, and anywhere we can interject it, anywhere we can bring it to light, I think it's an important thing to do. It's a personal mission. I'm sure Carolyn would agree.
Yeah, and Jackie, I came in late to the program. Give me the name of this book again. I have to run to Amazon right now and look it up.
Sale.
The title. And if you've got a link, too.
Yes. I first of all, I have a website, jackieboer.com.
Okay.
And the title of the book, the full title, is Logan, The Honorable Life and Scandalous Death of a Western Lawman.
Right. Now, yeah, Carolyn, that's Jackie Boer, B-O-O-R.
I had it misspelled. Thank you.
Yeah.
As translated to root element of society. B-O-O-R.
As in boorish.
Not dull, just rude.
Right now, so that I could tweet about, you know, one of the greatest ways to tweet about something is to go on a site, including Amazon.com, and use the icons to tweet, because then it jiggles Amazon's actual logarithms and helps you get more attention from Amazon in terms of mass mailings and that kind of thing.
There you go.
Wow.
So I'll do two things at once. I'll get to educate myself, and I'll jiggle your logarithms for you.
And we just learned a really good tip from Carolyn.
And Carolyn, I need to talk to you sometime next week about your little thingy we talked about.
Okay, sounds good.
She just gave us a tip.
Right, but right now I'm going to go back to Jackie, so get a hold of Amazon.
Nice to meet you, Carolyn.
Got your tip this week. Nice to meet you, Jackie.
And we'll be talking to you soon, Carolyn.
Okay, thanks.
Take care, hon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have fun to hear from you.
There she was.
That was great. We love to have people call in.
And
we
the
do.
Adventure continues.
Well, you know, we always ask people to call in because it's always fun to have them call in. And they get to meet you as well. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. I have to say, and this is from the bottom of my heart, as I read this book, I thought to myself, what a wonderful juxtaposition between the Old West rolling into the New West.
Yes.
And I thought, holy crap. Now, the people that were from the Old West, i.e. your two times great-grandfather, one would think that he would have fought that maybe a little bit, that things were changing maybe more rapidly than they really liked to see them change.
Well, you know, as I began to research the story, In the early 1980s, I knew virtually nothing about Tom Logan. Went to a family reunion, heard the old-timers talking about this ancestor that had been shot transporting a prisoner across the desert, or had walked by a saloon and got shot in the back by a wild, you know, miner. There were all of these different stories about what happened, and that was what initially drew my interest. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, we need to find out exactly what did happen. Mm-hmm. So I thought I was going to do a family brochure. And as I began researching, and I found this wealth of information in all kinds of little historical crevices within the county courthouse, within historical societies, museums, period magazines and newspapers, and realized what an incredible period of history, period this was in history. And I've often said that history certainly does more than reflect a moment in time. These events ripple through time. And what I was worried about is that if I research this guy, what am I going to discover? Is it going to be someone I will be proud of? Is it going to be a person that I just wish I hadn't really gotten interested in looking up? And what I discovered was this fairly progressive guy who was a proponent of education for women, and from the best that I can tell, based upon what he saw happening to single women at that time period. So he mm-hmm. wanted his daughters to have an education. Three were already in college when he was killed. I also discovered that he was known as a mediator. He did not, in all of the articles I read about him, in all of the cases in the court files, I never found one piece of evidence where he had pulled his weapon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was known as Our Tom. He was 6'4". I think that probably helped him out a bit. But I began to sense that he had an independent way of thinking, that he really wanted things to be better than they were. And perhaps no more evidence, if we're in the political season we're in right now, he was a member of the Silver Party in 1900, and after he lost that second election, the Democrats came to him and wanted him to run on their ticket, and the Republicans came to him and wanted him to run on their ticket, and he refused both, and met in a bowling alley with some of his constituents, and they formed an independent party, and he ran as an independent and won the position of sheriff, mm-hmm. because he would not side with the mine owners and he would not side with the mine operators.
Mm-hmm.
So there were these pieces of the puzzle that constantly informed me that he did not like the old West, the Wild West, where people he knew shot other people and got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he really was seeking to have more civility and a justice system that managed justice. His last act after he was shot by this gambler was to prevent the piano player from shooting the man who had just mortally wounded
him.
Right. Well, and you mentioned an altercation that he had, interestingly, with Wyatt Earp.
Yes, he did.
Tell us a little bit about that meeting between two saloon owners.
Well, this was a recollection. The week that he died, of course, people will begin retelling stories of related to Tom Logan and his service as sheriff. And one fellow recounted a time when Wyatt Earp was a bit tipsy and had gotten a little rowdy with his wife. He had struck her, and a young miner, not knowing who Wyatt Earp was, intervened and said, "Hey, don't do that," and Wyatt Earp left the premises to go get his guns and teach this young miner a lesson, and someone ran to get Tom Logan, and Tom came and took away Wyatt's guns until he cooled down. But he was, Wyatt was in his 50s at that time. He probably wasn't as foreboding as he had been earlier. And he was in Tonopah at the time. He had a saloon just down the street
right.
from Tom Logan's.
Right.
The Northern Saloon in Tonopah.
The Northern, right.
And that was after...
And Tom Logan's saloon was the American.
And the American. And that was after Wyatt and Josie had been in the Klondike, or had been in
the Klondike.
In Nome. They brought the Northern down with them.
Right. Brought them down with them.
Right.
And I also recognize that you refer to Tonopah under Tom's guidance as really being one of the most peaceful boom towns. I think the queen of the silver, queen of the silver towns, is that
right? Several newspapers that I would say it says Tonopah, known as the most peaceable mining camp in the world, and that was under his term.
Well, it certainly wasn't Tombstone.
No, it was not. Although Tombstone was at that time kind of cleaning up their act, and that's why May then. Biggs was one of the soil devs that left Arizona to go to Nevada, where rules and restrictions were not quite so heavy, and because Tombstone was cleaning up their red light district in the late 1800s.
Now, I've noticed in your writings, and in both in your articles and your book, is that you've said in several different occasions in several different places that Tom Logan was a very even-tempered, mild-mannered man that didn't like confrontation.
Right.
And he would do anything he could do to keep from getting into a confrontation.
Right.
But God help you if he did get into it with you.
Well, you know, those were words that I borrowed from some of the folks that wrote about him and talked about him. Mm-hmm. There were many editorials written by the local newspapers, and you know that he wouldn't pull a gun, but there was no better shot in the county than Tom Logan. He was an excellent horseman. Again, he was a Nevada son. He was born in 1861, and he had, you know, weathered the hard winters and was skilled. It, you know, his horsemanship, his ability to rope and shoot and survive. It took him 8 days to travel from one end of his district to the other end of his district in a horse and buggy.
Right. Well, he was a cowboy at one time.
He was indeed a cowboy. He absolutely was. And many of the lawmen of that era, you know, that's what would attract folks to certain individuals because they had this, you know, this toolbox of skills said that these are guys that can think on their feet.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in the book that you had the family reunion in 1985 and you became really curious. And was it you and your son, you stopped in at a local historical society or a museum?
We stopped in at a museum in Tonopah that had only been open a year or two, and this was opened by the Mesher brothers, and they had grown up in Nye County, and through the years they had gathered artifacts from, you know, their wanderings about the county, and we went into that museum, and I asked the clerk, "Do you happen to have anything on Tom Logan?" And she handed me an envelope. She says, "Oh, we knew the Logans were going to be in town, and this is for you." And it was an envelope that contained the preliminary transcript of all the witness testimony taken the day of the killing.
Oh, wow.
So it told us exactly who saw what. And later I met Alan Mesher and said, "Where did you find this transcript?" And he had found it in the Tonopah dump in the late 1950s and saw it said the killing of Tom Logan on it. And as a young man, thought that looked pretty interesting, maybe better than a DC comic book. And he tucked it away. And some 30 years later, it was waiting for our family to discover and finally
Holy
let us know
just,
what happened.
It just makes, you know, that's just astounding. That's more than a serendipity.
It's totally just, is astounding.
You know?
we have to break real quick, and I hate to do that because it's going to destroy your your rhythm, but hang tough for just a second. We have to do a commercial. We're going to do a little bit of music of this music called Tonopah. So hang with us, Jackie. We'll be right back
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
Oh, I'll do it. I got it right here in front of me.
I didn't know if you were doing music or... Okay.
Nestled into a little corner on Tapu Canyon and Sycamore in sunny Simi Valley is one of the finest steakhouses in Ventura County, Sutter's Mill. At Sutter's, you will find casual dining with a touch of elegance and a rustic steakhouse atmosphere. Their well-trained staff strives to provide their guests with a great dining experience. At Sutter's, you will find the finest in steaks and seafood, along with specialty items such as barbecue pork ribs, I did it without laughing, deep-fried chicken or shrimp. Sutter's offers a full bar with special happy hour pricing and never charges a corkage fee. Visit their website at Sutter's4dining.com to make online reservations and view their hours and menus. They also offer a summer special section, which gives you a 20% discount Monday through Thursday from 4 till close. Enjoy. For reservations, please call 805-520-4797 or go to www.suttersfordining.com on the web. And we went there, and it was fun. It was fun. It was great. Hey, we're going to give you a little music right now, so everybody just hang tough, and we'll be right back to you in just a second.
I carry my saddle by the side of the road. Hard rain's falling, wind blowing cold. East across the mountains, head of Battlesea, telling me it's time to hurry home. And I would fly there now if I had wings. Back to Tonopah, headlights glowing, the cars hurry past, just like the years.
And that is Tonopah by
Dave Steamy, the title track of an early CD of the wonderful award-winning singer-songwriter Dave Steamy, Tonopah. And every track on this CD seems to have to do with mining camps, with Nevada, with there's a great one on Bodie.
It's a great piece of music.
It's a beautiful piece of music.
Great piece of music.
And the whole time I was reading the book, Jackie, I just kept thinking of Dave Steamy and Tonopah.
he certainly is well known there and throughout the region.
Okay, if you're just now joining us, which if you're just now joining us, you are absolutely wrong. We have tonight as a guest on the Writer's Block, Jackie Boer, who wrote a great, great, great book about her two times great-grandfather, Tom Logan, who was the sheriff of Nye County from 1890, would you say, 1898 to 1906?
1899 to 1906.
Okay, 1899 to 1906. Just a bear of a man, gentle, great sheriff, easygoing. Was shot outside of a business that he partially owned with another lady. And the guy who shot him was a gambler and was prosecuted and
got away.
Mm-hmm. Got away. While we got you on the phone, talk to us a little bit about your
Your process. Begin to talk about process, but I was curious if, before we hit process, if I could ask one more question.
Absolutely.
Since this was family history that you were researching, and your research is just impeccable.
Oh my gosh, so good.
This book is like reading historical fiction, but it's not. It is as compelling and as engaging as if you were reading fiction, but it's nonfiction, and it's fantastic. Both Jim and I were blown away by it. But as you're researching your family, how difficult was it to write and be unbiased, if that was possible?
That was something that I was incredibly conscientious about, because my background as a writer, and I've written, you know, articles for newspapers and so forth, as a freelance writer, is I really believe in the power of accurate, competent, credible sources. Because what we write today will have impact 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 years from now. And I feel a high responsibility for that. And I credit my first editor as a teen reporter for holding that ethic in place. So I brought that ethic to the project as a writer. Because I was writing about a family member, I had to really ratchet it up, because I wanted to make sure that this book held its own in the historical archives of Nevada. Mm-hmm. And being a California girl, the last thing I wanted to do was go into Nevada and tell these folks their history. So I engaged historians, I engaged librarians, anyone I could that had an established track record as far as being accurate and in control of their history and their sources. Mm-hmm. I had one librarian, though, tell me, isn't it amazing how some stories scream to be told? And this one certainly did do that. I worked on it off and on for 30 years. And so I gathered information from family members, letters we would find, in little shoeboxes and photo albums and so forth, and gathered what I could from the family. And then I would use those pieces to build on and say, if it's in this location, there must be newspaper articles about this. Mm-hmm. And discovered a lot of, it was kind of like mining for gold, you know, to go to period books from that time, to work through the county records clerks' offices, assessors, museums, historical societies, talk to other people who've written about that period and exchange information. Because if the book didn't have credibility, I had not done my job.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that the title is so appropriate because it raises a question. Do you judge somebody's life at the end of the life by how the life ends? Do you look at the whole life? You know, how... You raised such a great question in the title itself.
Yes, something that I think if we all look, you know, within our own family trees, and there are these traumatic events or these catastrophic moments, and those are what are the most profound in our memories, yet there are so many other parts to an individual's life. Mm-hmm. And so what I found is that his death certainly did not define his life.
No.
And it was more complex than that.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that everybody's life is gauged and usually judged by how they live their lives now, not after they die.
Yes. Yes. So it was, with tremendous honor that our family received the Medal of Honor and Medal of Valor from the Nye County Sheriff's Department a few years ago, honoring his public service as a fallen peace officer.
See, I was blown away by that.
Mm-hmm. The book is dedicated to the families and descendants of fallen peace officers. Even though my generation did not know him, we felt the impacts of that death. A man left behind a widow and 8 children. Completely turned their lives upside down, altered the course of their futures, which had impact on the next generation. Mm-hmm. And then to be among some featured stories at the Smithsonian during Police Officers Memorial Week in 2015 was just an extraordinary honor to be able to showcase the life of a fallen officer from a century ago. And what I was not prepared for during Police Officers Memorial Week were the number of individuals, partners, widows, orphans, children who had lost fathers, sisters who had lost brothers, saying that this book was uplifting to them because it proved that someone lost so long ago had not been forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just, it was over. I cried more during that. and not even really able to define the tears. It just runs that deep.
Right. We have a good friend who's been a guest on the show, J.R. Sanders, who wrote a book.
I know J.R., yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine that you do, because his wonderful book,
Some
Gave All, highlights the life of about 10 or 12
unknown peace officers
that, lost their lives in the line of duty that don't, have never really gotten their due, never really been written about.
Fantastic book. Yeah. I've read it. Yeah. I reviewed it. And it's a perfect example of what I was just mentioning.
Yeah.
Well, you two should get together because he is doing another one. And he could put Tom Logan in there.
Yeah.
Yes, he knows about Tom.
I'm sure he does.
There's a little room for Tom.
Well, then never mind.
I actually grabbed my copy of it last night out of curiosity. Like, this sort of sounds familiar. Did J.R. cover Tom in his, book?
Okay, now comes the big question.
Yes.
Do you ever get writer's block?
Absolutely.
And what do you do when you get it?
I want to start by defining writer's block.
Okay.
From my perspective.
Okay.
And writer's block is, I don't know what to do next.
Okay,
and
I'll go with that.
For me, I had this massive amount, in the Logan book in particular, massive amount of research, and had organized it all chronologically and knew that I had 10 times more information than what should go into this book. So for me, it was, what should I do next? And when that happens, I do a couple of things. I give myself a day and just put it away, and then come back and read the last few things I've written, and sometimes that will take off.
Mm-hmm.
I will also sometimes intentionally stop writing when I have much more I want to write, because I'll come back to that point and it'll be easy to pick up and start again.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is to just write any old thing down that I know is going to be edited out, and but it will just keep the juices flowing.
Sure.
And the hardest part is just to keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
You can take those little breather breaks. I don't recommend drinking. I don't
joining a wine in the month club.
Not that I have tried that out, but I'm just saying that it happens, because sometimes things flow so fast you can't get
sure.
it out, and then
right.
other times, and then there's always the rewriting. And so with writer's block, it just means there's this little there's a speed bump.
Right.
And to get through that first draft, and then you go back and you refine. And so, especially when I'm talking to young people, children, you know, middle school kids, about writing, are you writers? Nobody will raise their hand. It's do you tell stories? Oh, I do tell stories. Mm-hmm. Then you're a writer. You just haven't put the words
right.
from your head
right.
onto paper.
Right, right, right. Right. Good point.
On your website, you have, all kinds of wonderful information, lots of links to articles that have been written about you and such. And I noticed that you had done a lot of public events, and you'd been to some really remarkable places. Can you give some tips to our author listeners about kind of how you do that, you know, find these events, and how do you prepare for them?
Well, I will... I look for thematically connected events, and again, I'm speaking about Logan. If there are, Western festivals, if there are rodeos, if there are, you know, within the region, certainly with Tom Logan, just a Rotary Club in Tonopah is an opportunity to share local history with that community. And then many people will say, hey, can you come do my book club? Can you, you know, to do the smaller events has been incredibly rewarding and fulfilling for me. And so it is essentially looking at the calendar, looking at what will be thematically appropriate, and then just selling your socks off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, to talk about not what you necessarily want to promote, but what you think they would
right.
like from you.
Right. We call that shameless self-promotion.
That's right. Shameless. Unabashed.
Do you
use... And it is difficult to do, but the world of the writer these days, different than 25 years ago.
Absolutely.
The writer does not have, you know, most writers, I will put it this way, most writers don't have the PR folks to go out there and just really pound the pavement
right.
and then call you and say, show up here and do your thing.
Right.
But it is part of the package. It is part of my adventure to find, you know, it took me close to, I would say, over a year to get a signing at Costco in Reno
mm-hmm.
because the book hadn't quite earned enough prestige.
Mm-hmm.
But we got there. And so you just keep looking and turning stones and ask other people who've appeared at these events, you know, how they got there. I find writers to be incredibly generous with what their experiences have been to help other writers.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel a need to return that favor based upon, you know, pay it forward.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true. We try to preach that here, too.
And this book yes. did win a couple of awards. Tell us briefly about that.
Yes, the book won. It was an Eric Hoffer History Book of the Year Award. That's an international award. No, I'm sorry. It was a finalist as a History Book of the Year, the Eric Hoffer Award. And that's an international award. It also won an award for cover design. It has the embossed horse and rider on it, which my editor, Nan Wishard, with Cable Publishing, I've got to remember to mention her, because as writing goes, writers need their editors, and they need a good team with their publishers, and she has just been the absolute best, and is responsible for another award, which is the Midwest Independent Publishers History Book of the Year.
Oh, cool.
Very
cool.
Exciting. Congratulations on that.
Very, very much
Thank
so.
Thank you.
Can we get, in the time we have left, can you want to give our audience your email address and website address and tell them
Yes.
where they can find you if you're going to be anywhere local?
Yes. The website is Jackie Boor, JACKIEBOOR.com. And my contact information is on that website. And I don't have any plans to be in the LA area soon, but if I do, it will be listed both there and on my Amazon.
But you're going to be up in Sacramento, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have listeners from all
over. We're nationwide, so...
Sorry about that.
No,
yeah, I know.
We're so startled when we see the download numbers off of iTunes and we figure they can't all be in LA. They've got to be from all over.
They're nationwide. But, you know,
that's fantastic. That's a real credit to you. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And we've actually been on the air now a little over a year.
And that's because of the guests. Honestly,
it really truly is.
It's really the guests.
You guys fuel this show.
Absolutely.
It's not us.
It's definitely not us. Jim.
We just kind of steer you around the bumps.
We just laugh.
It takes a team. We all know that.
That's exactly right. Well, Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us tonight. It's been wonderful having you on the show.
It's been my pleasure, and I again invite anyone who has any questions. I'm very accessible and happy to share any more information about how I researched this story, which one person called Rawhide Shakespeare. I thought that was a very good
That's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
to describe the Logan story, and I really appreciate your time.
Well,
and the good work that you do.
Well, thank you so much, and you know, we try to put writers together with readers, and readers together with writers, and writers together with other writers, and we've actually done a pretty good job, I would have to say.
I know have been reading things that I never would have read before and have loved every one of them.
You know, we have to read so much now that we can't stop.
No.
We just had a guest.
Well, good. We have to keep that written word going.
Exactly.
Because, gosh darn it, even letters are disappearing. That's been, and so we've got to keep the writing going.
We
keep
just,
the stories preserved.
We just got today three books from a writer that was on 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, all of a sudden, he just arbitrarily sends us three of his books. And we had already read one.
Yep.
And we thank you, incidentally.
Yeah, we will read them.
We do thank, his name is Bob Cole? No. Oops.
Oh, my gosh.
It
was Jerry Dooley.
Bob
Cole.
Bob Cole. That's his nom de plume. Anyway, thank you again, Jackie. We loved to have you on the show. And as Carolyn Howard Johnson did. Besides that, Carolyn, if you're still listening, it is Boor, B-O-O-R. Just like Carolyn did, feel free to call back any Thursday night.
I will.
We hope you do. Because
that. I'm just delighted to be part of your circle.
We love to have our writers call in and just kind of chat with us for a minute. And again, thank you so much for joining us. And we hope that you have a wonderful week. And good luck in whatever you got going on.
Thank you so much. Carry on, folks.
Always.
Keep writing.
And whoop, she's gone.
All right.
Okay, next week on the Writer's Block, we have Dr. Robert Hirsch.
Yes.
And I don't remember what he's written.
I have not prepared for him yet.
I have got some stuff at his from
Starting
his
tomorrow,
home.
We will begin to prepare.
Robert Hirsch's stuff this weekend. And we'll be ready for him next week. And I'm not even too sure where he lives, but he's either going to be here or on the phone. Pretty much that's the only options we have. Thank you so much for a great show, Bobby. Jim, always nice seeing you. The 29th of September, I get a new hip. Yay! For all of you people out there that really care. Okay, that's our show for tonight. Y'all have a wonderful week. We'll be back next Thursday, 7 o'clock, on the Writer's Block. Thank you.